just going to read God's word. It's only 7 verses. It's found in the Old Testament, today's reading. It's 2 Kings chapter 4, verses 1 to 7. The title of the message is, and I was praying about it and thinking about it because I knew Gerald was going to be speaking this morning at Cap Sunday. So the title of this morning's message is this: The Creditor is Coming. The Creditor is Coming. I'm reading from the Amplified Bible. Now one of the wives of a man of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha for help, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant reverently feared the Lord, but the creditor is coming to take my 2 sons to be his slaves in payment for a loan." Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have of value in the house?" She said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house except a small jar of olive oil." Then he said, "Go, borrow containers from all your neighbors, empty containers, not just a few. Then you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons and pour out the oil you have into all these containers, and you shall set aside each one when it is full." So she left him and shut the door behind her and her sons. They were bringing her the containers as she poured the oil. When the containers were all full, she said to her son, "Bring me another container." And he said to her, "There is not a one left." Then the oil stopped multiplying. Then she came and told the man of God. He said, "Go, sell the oil and pay your debt, and you and your sons can live on the rest." May the Lord, please be seated. May the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts. I've broken this short story down under 5 simple headings: the crisis, the creditor, the cry for help, the containers, and the clearing of the debt. Those are the 5 headings that I've broken the story down under. Now, we've already heard this morning of how crippling debt crisis can be, how some people, and this is real, can become so desperate that they have seriously contemplated suicide. Here's some shocking statistics. Over 420,000 people, now get that, 420,000, I think Wembley Stadium holds in around 90,000. Just to put it into perspective. So over 420,000 people in problem debt consider taking their own life in England each year. They consider taking their own life. 420,000. That's almost unbelievable. Near 500,000 people. More than 100,000 people in debt actually attempt suicide. Roughly a quarter of those affected by problem debt, they don't just consider taking their own life, they actually attempt to take their life every year. I think I shared this with you a while back, but when I think of this story, it breaks my heart, because it's real. It's real. And sometimes what goes on around us, folks, if it's not affecting us, it's not that real. It doesn't seem that real unless it's affecting us. Pain's not real to you unless you're in pain. Suffering's not real to you unless you're suffering or someone close to you is suffering. But in 2006, a millionaire called Christopher Forster, he killed his wife, his 15-year-old daughter, he shot their 5 horses, and then shot their 4 dogs. Then he blocked the entrance to their mansion, set it on fire, and shot himself. Why? Why? Well, from the outside looking in, this man, his family, they had everything. Everything that the world would say is worth having. But what happened in his case, and Gerald sort of alluded a little bit this morning, that there are people, and they find themselves in debt crisis, not because of anything that they have done, like that family we saw, but a circumstance, a situation has arisen that they're totally out of control. They can't do a thing about it. But that's different to what happened to this man. He started to live an opulent lifestyle. He started to live way beyond his means. And he got himself into deeper and deeper debt and financial trouble. He started living beyond his means. He became bankrupt. You know what happened next? This is true. It's documented. The creditors were coming for him. The creditors were coming for him. Apparently, he told a friend shortly before killing his family and himself and destroying his property that the creditors, the banks, would get nothing. They would get nothing, but that they would carry him away in a box. You know the old saying, over my dead body? That's exactly what happened. They carried him away in a box, and the charred remains of his wife and child. So for the five short points in this short story, number one, the crisis. This widow of this dead prophet found herself in a truly terrible situation. And again, death often doesn't come announced, it just happens. And that's what happened here in this story. Her husband, he has died, we assume suddenly, and she's left in this terrible situation. Now, we need to understand, and this is where context is so important in any story, that back then, this woman and her children, she couldn't go to social services or to the DHSS department and go, by the way, I'm destitute. My husband has just died. I need help. She couldn't do it, folks, because way back in those times, that did not exist. She knew nothing about a government scheme that would assist her or any life insurance policies that she could draw on. No, nothing. It appears from the story that there were no family members or friends she could turn to for financial help. Why do I say that? Because she doesn't do it. We don't read of her going to a family member or a friend or a neighbor and saying, you know what, look at my situation. I'm in big trouble. Care for the family wasn't there. Certainly what Gerald was talking about didn't exist. Cap wasn't there. Basically, this woman, folks, was on her own with her two children. What an awful crisis to be in. Even today, folks, this is fact. I've taken a lot of funerals, and I know that there are people today, and they're in debt because they can't pay their funeral costs. So this crisis of debt is real, and it was real for this widow and her two children. The creditor, number two. Don't know if you watched the BBC program called Sheriffs Are Coming. Did any of you watch that? I have to pull my glasses down a bit. I don't like them hanging off my nose, but when I'm looking through them, you're a blur. I can't see your wee face, even though you have half of it covered. But if you saw that, it was quite interesting, wasn't it? The sheriffs are coming, the bailiffs are coming, the creditors are coming, call it whatever you like. The program was called The Sheriffs Are Coming. Who are the sheriffs? Who are the creditors? Well, their job, they're high court enforcement officers whose job it is simply to collect unpaid debts. Now, in the culture of this widow's day, it was probably normal, what we read. Wouldn't happen, hopefully, today in our society, but maybe in other societies. It was normal, probably, for children to be taken as a payment for a debt and put into slavery until the debt could be paid. What's the biggest problem with that? How long would it take for the debt to be paid? What if it was an unscrupulous creditor? Her two children could have spent basically all their lives as slaves. Her children would have been taken from her by this creditor. She may never have seen them again. We don't know what would have happened to them. As a parent, if you're a parent here this morning, grandparent, can you imagine? Can you imagine if that was you in that crisis situation? The creditor is coming to take your children from you and you don't know what the outcome is going to be. We have no idea what this widow woman was thinking at the prospect of losing her two children. It was bad enough that she'd lost her husband, but now her children, she was about to lose them as well. See, folks, this creditor, it seems that this widow had no confidence whatsoever in pleading for mercy and pleading for compassion. We don't read that. You see, most creditors are merciless. Very few show compassion or consideration. And it appears that this creditor, he certainly wasn't showing this widow, or wasn't going to show her, any compassionate or consideration in her crisis. Getting what he was owed, that's what was important. That's what his only consideration would be. Number three, the cry for help. It was interesting listening to the video that these people, they made a cry for help. Folks, not everybody does. Those who have taken their own lives, many of them may not have sought help or thought that help was available to them. But this widow, she cried for help. Not to her neighbors, not to her family, but to the man of God. Listen. Now, one of the wives of a man of the sons of the prophets cried out to Elisha for help, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead. And you know that your servant reverently feared the Lord." In other words, he was a God-fearing man, a fellow prophet who worked with Elisha. "Your servant reverently feared the Lord." Here's this word again, but. But the creditor is coming to take my two sons to be his slaves in payment for a loan. It is true, many people who find themselves in this credit crisis, they may not ask for help or support. And there are various reasons for that. Some are just downright too embarrassed to ask for help. Some are ashamed. Some feel humiliated. And tragically, many fear of being judged for the situation that they find themselves in. But this widow, she did cry out for help. And she cried out to the only one, it seems, that she thought could, and possibly could, help her. Elisha, he was the leading prophet of God at that time. And as I said, her husband was a fellow prophet. I just wonder, did the dead man's widow think, you know, my husband, he was a God-fearing man who revered the Lord and who worked for the Lord. And now I need help and now I'm in trouble. I wonder, do you think you feel an obligation to help in this situation? Now, I don't know whether Elijah did or not feel that obligation, but we do know this for certain. He did help. He did help. He didn't take an attitude, well, I mean, that's okay, he's dead now, what do you want me to do? I have no obligation. It's like, I remember one time hurting a finger. That one there, see it twisted of it? That was playing goalkeeper. And I had a big splint on it. And what's that shape was, I took it off when I shouldn't have. Anyway, I remember going into work with it on. I would have been about 17 at the time. And came to do a particular part of the job in the printing process. And it was quite wet, this part of it. You had to hose things down. And I wasn't supposed to get this thing wet. And I remember saying to the foreman about it. And I said, "I'm sorry, I can't do this part of the work." And this is the truth. He looked up and he says, "What are you doing here then? Go home." That's the truth. "What are you doing here then?" I left a bit out, actually. "Clock out and go home." which meant is once you clock out, folks, you don't get paid. So, I mean, trust me, and not everybody has compassion towards people who maybe you think they should have some sort of an obligation. I thought he would at least said, well, at least you've come into your work. There's this bit that you can't do, but you're doing everything else that you can do. That wasn't the case, folks. But anyway, no matter what was in Elisha's mind, whether he felt obligated or not, he got involved in this woman's situation. Elisha said to her, what shall I do for you? What shall I do? It was a bit of a rhetorical question, as you'll see in a moment. What shall I do for you? Tell me. And then he said, what do you have of value in the house? Now again, when I read that afresh, it seemed a bit of a strange question. What do you have of value in the house? Because I'm thinking as I'm reading this story, well, surely if the woman would have had of anything of value in the house, she would have sold that thing of value and paid off the creditor, or at least attempted to pay some of it off. But we'll see what happened. What do you have of value in the house? And we'll see that the woman didn't think she really had much of value in the house. Number four, collect containers. Collect containers. Perhaps one of the greatest lessons in this wee story is that we often do not see the potential value of something we have until it is married to faith. I'll say that again. Perhaps one of the greatest lessons in this story is that we often do not see the potential value of something we have until it is married to faith. Tell me, what do you have of value in the house? She said, this is her reply, your maidservant has nothing in the house. And then it seems that she had an epiphany, a moment of inspiration. Oh, except a small jar of olive oil. Now imagine, this wasn't the jar. But I want you to see comparatively here this morning of what we're talking about in this story. Just to get a feel of what this widow woman, what her crisis was, and what she was being asked to do. So she went, oh yeah, I've just remembered I've a small jar of olive oil. There you go. She, as I would have been thinking as well, understandably thought or saw that her small jar of olive oil was totally insufficient and useless in this crisis situation. But then the prophet, he said this to her, go, borrow containers from all your neighbors, empty containers, not just a few. Then you shall go in and shut the door behind you and your sons and pour out the oil you have into all these containers and you shall set aside each one when it's full. Okay, so here we go. Our two boys, they go out and they come back with all these containers to mum. So, we have that one, and that, and maybe there was a whole lot more. All right, so you're this widow, and you've got this wee jar of oil, and this man of God has just told you, take that jar of oil and pour it into all the containers that your kids bring you. Come on. No, really. Come on. What would you do? What would you do? I think I would look at this little jar of oil. I would set it down. I would sit down. And I would cry my eyes out. Honestly, that's what I think I would do. I would set that down, I would sit down, and I'd cry my eyes out. And I would go, what? What is that man of God talking about? What is he? Does he realize how little I have and all these containers, and he wants me to fill them with that? This is where this wee widow has to get all the credit. She didn't sit down, pull the blanket over her head and cry. What did she do? She started to pour the oil. And sometimes in life, folks, God asks you and me and others to do things, and we go, what? How's that going to work, Lord? That just doesn't make sense. That's illogical. That won't work. And what do? We leave the oil. We leave the little oil in the jar, and we don't do anything. Folks, if that widow would have done that, she'd have lost her two sons. If she'd have done that, but I maybe would have done, she'd have lost her two sons, but she didn't do it. She obeyed. And what I want to say, part of this thing, it's in this story, I believe, is so important. Whatever God tells you to do, do it. Do you remember at that feast, the first miracle Jesus did, the wedding at Cana, when they ran out of the wine and there was only water? Do you remember? And Mary, Jesus' mother, she gets involved, probably because she knew the bride and groom. And she says, Lord, you need to do something here quick. They're running out of wine. This is going to be a total disaster, total embarrassment to the family, to the community. And then, you know, Jesus got involved. What do you got? There's big water pots over there. I think there were 12. Bring them over. And he blessed them. And he says, now go and take some to the guy who's over the wedding ceremony. And Jesus turned the water into wine. What did Mary's mother say to those servants? Whatever he tells you to do, do it. If those servants would have taken the attitude, we know that those water pots are full of water, and there's no way on this earth we're going to embarrass ourselves by going up to that top table and giving that guy, the master of ceremony, a glass of water and go, what do you think of that? Folks, sometimes the things that you and I see as ridiculous, as unworkable, as not making sense, those are the times God is wanting you and I to enter into a place in our lives where we encounter and we experience the power of God. The power of God at work in our lives. Isn't it great when you hear about what God does in somebody else's life? I love to listen to those stories. But what about when God actually does it in your life or my life? It becomes personal. It becomes actually real. Because it has happened to you or it has happened to me. She followed his instructions, and we know what happened. But when I was doing this quickly, the story of Jesus, and it will be quickly, I'm not going to tell the whole story, but do you remember that occasion? He's on a mountainside, or he's in Bethsaida anyway, and it was late in the afternoon, and his disciples came to him, and he says, it's getting late. Send the crowd away to the surrounding villages. They're hungry and they need something to eat. Send them away. That's what they said. Well, Jesus, really, if you look at his life, isn't the type of man who sent needy people away. He wasn't. How many times do we read when Jesus saw the crowd or an individual, he had compassion? Or depending on what version or translation you're reading, his heart went out to them, or he had mercy upon them. Time and time again, that was who Jesus was. That was his character. His disciples at this point, they were far behind the character of their Savior, of their Master, of their King. What did he tell them? You give them something to eat. You do something about it. And friends, today I pray with all my heart that the attitude of the church and individuals, because it's people who build up, make the church. It's not the building. It's people that in these days of so much need and heartache and pain and suffering, that we don't adopt this attitude. It's not my responsibility. Send them away. Somebody else will look after them. There's a government agency down the road there. They'll do it. There's a charity over there. Let them. They've got more money than we have. Folks, we'd tell you, if the need is presented to you or to me or to the church, we need to address it. We need to address it. None of this, oh, send them away. We don't have the resources, and we may not. Now, folks, God will never ask you to give what you can't. God's not a fool. He's all wise. But whenever God asks us to do something, you can take it for granted that he's not asking us to do it if we can't do it. He's not asking us to give something that we can't give. He won't do it, folks. He won't do it. But we have choices to make. The woman, she had the choice. She started pouring the oil, and we know, we'll see how that worked out. Jesus, what is there here? Is there anything here? Yeah, there's five loaves, two fish. Get them. And when he got them, he put his hands on them and he blessed them. We know what happened. Over 5,000 men, plus women and children, and 12 baskets were left over. I love that wee end bit. Do you know what that, you know why? It means they went home with a packed lunch. They went home with a packed lunch. But nothing. Nothing. Except 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. And when it was brought to Jesus, that little, folks, do not despise the day of small things, of little things. You may think, well, I can't give very much. Well, here, you'll see this, but when we come to the end, the little that we give in faith and God gets his hand on it, trust me, it becomes much. It becomes much because of his blessing. But we have our bit to do too, folks. We have our bit to do too. Going on. Number 5, quickly. Clear your debt. Clear your debt. I've already read it. He told her what to do. She did it. And then when she went back to him, the man of God, he said, go sell the oil, pay your debt. You and your sons can live in the rest. Now, it might seem a bit taking it for granted that the woman would pay her debt. But Elisha wasn't taking this for granted. He told her what to do. He told her what to do beforehand. She'd done it. She'd got the container. She'd poured the oil. And now he's telling her to pay the debt. Take the excess oil. Sell it. Pay the debt and then live on what remains. Some time ago, someone told me a story, a true story, about a man who was addicted to gambling. It ruined his life. It ruined his family life, his children's lives. And a concerned family member asked the man, how much he owed? How much debt do you owe? The family member gave him the money to pay the debt, and it was quite a bit. Do you know what the man did with the money? Did he go and pay his debt? Did he go and pay the creditor? No, he went and gambled it. Now, not only was he foolish for not paying his debt, I have to be honest, folks, the family member who gave him the money to pay the debt had obviously no idea at all about the power that gambling addiction holds upon some people. He had no idea, or he wouldn't have done it. The proper thing, the wise thing to have done was find out who do you owe money to, okay, and went directly and paid the debt. So the man got into a worse situation. That was a foolish thing that man did. But what this widow did, there was nothing foolish in any of it, folks. She cried for help. Elisha got involved. Elisha instructed her as what to do. And even though it must have seemed crazy, it seemed crazy to me, maybe it didn't to her, but she did it, thankfully. And the thing is this, when we obey God, it commands blessing. When we obey God, folks, it commands a blessing. It's not my law, it's God's law. It commands blessing in obedience to God. And the woman was blessed. She saved her family. She saved her 2 children. Listen to what Jesus said in Luke chapter 6. Give. This is the Amplified Bible. Give and it will be given unto you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, with no space left for more. For with the standard of measurement you use when you do good to others, it will be measured in return to you. Do you get that? This is Jesus' words, not mine. When you do good to others, it will be measured to you in return with the measure that you use. Paul says in Acts 20, in everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work we must help the weak. Remembering the words of the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Just very quickly, folks, this wasn't part of my original message, but this came to me late last night. I'm not going to read it all to you. I'm just going to tell you what I think that God was trying to say to me through it. I wasn't going to do it, and I just felt, no, the Lord wants you to do it, so do it. I'm not going to read out the whole story, but it's the parable of the unforgiving servant. That's in Matthew. Read it for yourself, Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 to 35. And what I'm not saying this morning, I'm not using this parable to make a declaration that if you or if anyone is in debt to you, that you should just forget about their debt. I'm not using this parable for that. But what I sense God was saying to me is this, that perhaps there is someone, a situation, and they're owed money by someone or people, and they're not genuinely able to pay that debt back at the moment, and they're in a bad place because of their debt. Perhaps the Lord would have you seriously consider giving an extended period of time for the payment to be made, or perhaps prayerfully consider cancelling the debt altogether. Now, I don't know if that applies to anybody here or someone who maybe listens to this online. I don't know. But I can tell you this personally. I know what it means to have a debt paid for you. And I can tell you, folks, you never forget it. You never forget it. And it was whenever I needed my hip replacement. 12,000 euros had to be in the sports clinic on the morning of my operation. Someone put that into their account. At the end of that process, I'd made an application to the health authority and they paid a portion of it. The operation was approximately £10,000. So they paid about, I think, 6,700, which left just over 3,000 that needed to be repaid. And I was happily entering into a plan to repay that £3,000 to the person who very kindly had compassion. And then, out of the blue, and this is what I'm saying to you folks, God is able. God is able. I mean, out of the blue, no coercion, nothing. Someone whose mother I buried said to me, she saw me limping. I actually went to visit her mum. And she saw me limping. And she says, if you hurt your leg. And I told her the story. And she said, wow. You see that repayment plan that you're considering? I went, yeah. Forget about it. And I went, what do you mean? I can't forget about it. I owe it. Or I will owe it. And they said, forget about it. And they paid that. They paid that. Folks, it's a wonderful thing, trust me, to have your debt paid for you. That's a literal debt. And I'm just sensing that maybe there's someone and they're listening to what I'm saying. And if they read that parable, the unmerciful servant, he was forgiven a debt. He owed a debt, and the man who he owed it to, it says he had compassion on him. He had mercy on him. He forgave it. Do you know what that man did? The man who was forgiven, another man owed him money. and he demanded it. He demanded it. Give it back now. And the man said, like he had said previously, I can't. It's not that I don't want to. I can't. And you read the story, he went and had him put in prison. He went and had him put in prison. And the thing is this, folks, when God shows you and I mercy and compassion, should we not show that to other people? I'm not saying that to use this parable to say that every debt that is owed should be just wiped out without thought. I'm not saying that at all. But what I'm saying is this, maybe there's someone and they're in an awful situation, worse than what you even know they are, and you can help. You can help. Either by extending the time that is necessary or prayerfully. I'm not telling you to do this. Or prayerfully say, God, what would you have me to do concerning this debt? And if God says, I want you to forgive it, then forgive it. And if he says, I want you to extend that amount of time, then extend it. But we should do whatever Jesus tells us to do, shouldn't we? Amen? Amen. We'll leave it there.